The Survivor Know-It-All season premiere edition is made possible by support from the Rob Has a Podcast patron community. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a Rob Has a Podcast patron, check out our Patreon page and my Patreon video at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thanks again to all of our patrons at robhasawebsite.com/patron.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yes, that is right. We are back. Oh, let's say returning, Stephen Fishback.
Rob Cesternino, it's so great to talk to you after a month, many months away. Would you say that podcasting is a classic Goliath move? You know, you're like, hey, I want to be the one to raise my hand and stand up and talk about the episode.
No, it's a David move. It's all about adversity, overcoming technical difficulties. That's what it's all about. And Stephen, I'm so happy to be back here with you. Other than your wedding over the summer, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I have barely spoken to you since we last left off, and I didn't even get to talk to you about the Survivor finale of Ghost Island.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. We never talked about the finale. Sometimes we'll usually do like some sort of catch-up, but you're so busy, you know, podcasting, Big Brother, being a dad, having a family, like, you know.
Yeah. I never have time to talk to almost anybody. You're right. Stephen, how is married life?
It's the best. I love it. It's so fun. You know, it's just great.
That's what I hear. It's so fun. All right, Stephen, we've got a lot to talk about here tonight after a Survivor David versus Goliath 90 minutes. We did not get a tribal council. It was a medical evacuation for Pat Cusack as he became the first person out from Survivor David versus Goliath. Of course, you could hear Josh Wigler's conversation with Jeff Probst, with a bunch of the people from the Survivor production, as well as Pat Cusack himself, on the fourth and final episode of First One Out, up on robhasawebsite.com. Right now, I myself will speak to Pat Cusack at about 12:30 Eastern time today, so be on the lookout for that. And then Dr. Mike, Stephen, will join me on the recap.
Trying to get him out of the way when it's a pretty uncontroversial episode.
He
right?
picked that one. He said, hey, am I doing a podcast? I said, sure. And he said, who's doing the premiere? I said, nobody. He's like, well, are you going to ask me? I was like, all right, if you want to be up first, go for it.
Yeah, he can talk about a lot with, you know, this Dan and Kara relationship that's happening. You know, some island sex tips.
Yeah, so he'll talk to us about all that coming up. And then, of course, I will have the feedback show over the weekend. Shannon Gates will join me for that and the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. So get your Wiggle Room submissions coming up for the David versus Goliath wand off. Stephen, next week, you and I are going to be together in person for our live episode when we will see, hopefully, the first person voted out of Survivor David versus Goliath. We will be in person. That's a sold out show. So very sorry for anybody who wants to join us late here in the game. But we will be streaming that as well. So look for us live in our regular time slot next week around 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Well, you look like you're in Caroline's now with that brick wall behind
you. Yes, I'm going to do a set right after this. So be on the lookout for that show. And if you want to come out and see a live show, you can come out and join us at Run It Up Reno, because I'm going to be there on Wednesday night, October 24th. We've got a great lineup for anybody who wants to come out and see us at the Peppermill Resort in Reno, Nevada. It is going to be myself, Tyson, Boston Rob Mariano, Adam Klein, Michelle Fitzgerald is going to be there from what I'm hearing, Stephen.
So you're just associating with winners now.
Yes, winners and you.
Like, Rob, yes. Enough for you. No, I'm not going to be there.
Well, I mean, I associate with you.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah. Yeah, against your will, just out of like, you know, yeah. Out of like, you know, inertia.
Yes. Well, look, it's like a marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a lot of fun.
Yes, which is a lot of fun. Exactly. Yeah. And so if you want to come out and see us in Reno, Nevada, that is a free show. You, as Chris Noble once said, you do not need a ticket. There's also a karaoke party to follow with some, you know, it's a great fun. I think they even give you a free drink ticket. If you can make it out to Reno, Nevada, you will not be disappointed on October 24th. Get more information at runitupreno.com. Use the promo code RIU Reno to book a room at the beautiful Peppermill Resort, all part of Jason Somerville's Run It Up Reno poker tournament. You don't need to play poker to come out and see us live, though. Okay, Stephen.
Just because they won the game doesn't mean they know more about the game.
Yep. Is that just an anti-winner take?
I don't know. I don't like to see you running with this winner crowd. It's, you know.
I think that people, kind of hold what they have to say in higher regard, though, no?
Mistakenly.
All right. Stephen, all right. Of course, as Survivor Know-It-Alls, people hold what we have to say in a very, very high regard.
No regard.
Stephen, I guess let's talk about the evacuation of Pat. A very dramatic moment. I thought for a second, I'm like, did I miss a segment? Why is there, I watched the challenge, and then now we have a medical evacuation going on. And I was like, what did I miss? But apparently that the waves were so rocky out there and it was so rough on the water that Pat suffered this injury. Stephen, have you been a part of one of these boat rides in the storm?
Yeah, and it's terrifying. I mean, I don't know how much I can talk about it, but it is really scary. And, you know, you're not taking a cruise ship, you know, from place to place. They're not giant boats. So it's when you're on those waves, it's intense. And I don't want to say more than that, but it's really, you know, there's nothing you can do, right? Like, this is just shows how real the show is. They're out there in the elements, and, you know, as the seas get worse and you know, the storms increase, you have these more extreme conditions and the contestants are just really vulnerable.
Yeah. And Stephen, so we had this very harrowing incident for poor Pat here in this first episode. Really gut-wrenching to see him go through all this and then have him say like, no, not like this, not like this. That's what he just kept repeating over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is like not how anybody wants to go. The feeling that, you know, you didn't get to play your game, that you were pulled from the game, that sense of just kind of incomplete trajectory, right? You know, I think everyone who's voted out lives that moment of like, oh, I could have done this differently and I could have done this differently. But when you're not voted out at all, you don't have any sense of completion or closure. Like, you feel like this thing was taken away from you by forces outside your control rather than maybe your own mistakes.
Did you think there was any chance that Pat was going to be able to make it through this, Stephen?
I think when they show you the boat ride, that's when you know he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, it was dramatic. But I think I lost track of the time with the 90-minute premiere. And then once I looked at my watch, I was like, oh, it's 9:15. Pat's not making it out of this.
So are the Davids going to have to go to tribal council? Like, they still lost the challenge. You know,
this was it.
So that they're off the hook. That doesn't seem right.
They're off the hook. And maybe specifically, we'll talk about who exactly got off the hook. But let me just stick with Pat here for a moment. Do you think, is this the last we've seen of Pat? Will Pat get a second shot at this?
I don't think so. I hate to say it. I mean, you could see the argument and maybe a second chance season, you throw Pat in there because people have a lot of sympathy for this. But it wasn't like Caleb, where he had like a couple of episodes to really prove himself. You know, he didn't go out in this crazy, I'm giving my all at every moment, like life and death medical evacuation. It was sort of like a fluke. And, you know, maybe in the Pat versus Courtney Moon season, like, they'll both come back. But I don't have high hopes. I mean, I'm very sad. I would love to see Pat play again. I loved his energy. You know, he was a fun character because he was a hard worker, but he was also a really, really big personality. You know, he grated on people, but they also appreciated him at the same time. You know, whenever you see that kind of complexity from someone, as well as someone just kind of really putting their mark on the season with their forceful personality, it's fun to see. I mean, I would love it if they threw him in there again for a second chance or just like some, but I think it's kind of unlikely.
Steven, are you there for the Pat versus Courtney Moon season?
Yeah, I'm team Pat all the way.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't, you know, she shouldn't have jumped out there with her. With her.
Jeff like did that. Say you want to land with your arms folded. He did say that.
Rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the one thing that I would say that maybe there's a glimmer of hope for Pat Cusack was that Jeff Probst seems to be very taken with Pat Cusack. And you look, he is a fun character. I was cracking up at a couple of things that he told to Josh Wigler in First One Out. So that he definitely is a big character. But Jeff Probst said that the origin story of Survivor David versus Goliath was Pat came in and we said, that's it. David versus Goliath.
Wow. Well, and you know, he was, you know, when he was talking to, remind me of the doctor's name on the Goliath tribe.
Dr. Allison.
Allison, thank you very much. You know, then Pat was sort of the representative of this is what a David is. And, you know, he has this incredible story. So, I mean, you know, maybe like, you know, that would be cool. Like, I would love to see that. I think probably a lot of people, you know, sometimes with the early boots, people wonder, like, why am I seeing this person again? They didn't really do much in the game. And I do think people would have room in their hearts for Pat.
Yeah. I do think in some sort of a second chances season, I think that maybe one that was picked by production, I do think that he has a chance because Jeff just seems to be so blown away by Pat.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I mean, that's really inspiring. I mean, maybe there is hope for Pat. And then Barassi could come back too.
Well, I don't know if Barassi made as much of a mark on Jeff Probst. They didn't base the season.
Great, like all the great early medevacs from days gone
That's
by.
That's the theme. I mean, Russell Swan did get to come back based on the strength of an early medevac. So I guess that there is some precedent for this.
Mike Scoopin came back?
Yeah. Well, we don't need to talk about that, Steven. Okay. All right. Well, then let's talk about some of the strategy from this episode. And of course, I will be speaking with Pat coming up here in a couple hours. So be on the lookout for that in the podcast feed. Make sure you subscribe. RobHasAWebsite.com/iTunes for all things RHAP and RobHasAWebsite.com/Survivor Podcast for our Survivor only podcast feed, which includes the B&B and Why Blank Lost. David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis might have a bit of a challenge on Why Blank Lost this week.
Well, or no challenge at all.
Might be an open and shut case. So, yeah. Steven, it looked as though it was going to be Nick who was going to be the person voted out from the David tribe in this episode. Do you think that that was how it was going to go down?
I think that's likely. I mean, it sure seemed like that was the people, you know, there was enough ill will against him from, you know, his somewhat obvious scheming, his complete shirking of work that, at least from what we saw, he was the guy around whom a consensus was building that this is the guy we want out. This is the guy we don't like. He doesn't reflect our morals. I honestly think that's part of a lot of early boots. It's like the tribe almost defining itself by whom they're excluding. Mm-hmm. You know, like some tribes are really about like, hey, we're all hardworking. We're all in this together. And actually, you know, as ridiculous as this David versus Goliath theme is, I bet that kind of made Nick more of an outcast, that sense of like, hey, we're David's, we're supposed to be working hard. Although not really relevant to the historical David, but whatever.
He didn't work hard on his slingshot?
He was like, you know, he was a shepherd. And granted, like shepherds are, you know, before he became a king, and I'm sure there's a lot of hard work with kings, and I'm sure there's a lot of hard work with shepherds, but like he wasn't necessarily known as like this super industrious.
I don't know why you're shading David.
The King David? No, I mean, I just think, you know, he didn't have to work hard. He was an incredibly gifted shepherd. He was amazing.
So are you saying that he was a Goliath of shepherds?
Well, by this season's rubric of what is a David and what is, I'm actually not sure. I mean, again, like, as we know, like playing rock, paper, scissors makes someone a Goliath. So like, did David play rock, paper, scissors?
Survivor, like, rock, paper, scissors sounds like a great season.
Exactly.
And like, these people are the rocks. They are solid and hardened by life. These people are paper. They work in an office in a corporate setting. They know how to beat the rock at their own game. But then there's the scissors. They can cut through the corporate red tape. They're the people that think outside of the box, but the rocks have their number. No matter what happens, a rock is always going to beat a scissor.
Wow, that actually is like a perfect new version of the classic white collar, blue collar, no collar theme. That's amazing.
Our first challenge will be determined by a game of rock, paper, scissors.
That's incredible. You can just imagine like these huge obstacle course mazes in the form of
you could sort of squint and see Survivor rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, you don't even have to squint. I'm wide-eyed with enthusiasm.
A classic game played by generations now will define a season of the greatest game, Survivor.
I'm in.
Not bad.
I'm in.
Not bad.
But I think that like, oh, sorry, but just to go back to Nick, yeah. Sorry, to detour to the actual episode. I think like because he was like sort of against how they were defining themselves, it was easy to be like, he's not a hard worker. He's schemy. That's not us. But kudos to Nick for realizing that he was on the outs and had to kind of meet his tribe where they were. And he had to open up and then share. And I actually thought that was an incredibly well-produced segment where typically when someone has their like big, I'm sharing my trauma moment, you get these like soaring orchestrals and, you know, like in come the trumpets. But the music, if you go back and listen to the music in that scene, it's really interesting. It's kind of like tense and sinister. So it's not, but at the same time, it's not like totally like evil and nefarious. So it's not saying like, hey, here's Nick, the hero who is, you know, finally opening up and having his moment, but nor is it saying, hey, here's Nick, the villain who is like cynically using this very personal story to create bonds with his tribe. The scene really towed that middle ground where it sort of showed him, you know, all the kind of conflict and ambivalence of that moment. Like he is sharing this personal moment and he is having a real emotional time, but it's also somewhat to serve his interest in the game.
Yeah, I was a little confused by what was about to happen because Nick was talking about how, well, boy, you know, everybody's opening up and I'm going to do something. I didn't think I was going to do something like this. And so I guess here goes nothing. And I thought we were getting set up for some sort of like Russell Hance in Katrina story where he was going to, I need to invent something to be able to bond with this group. Ultimately, he ended up sharing a real heartfelt story. And I'm not sure ultimately if, it seemed like that it was received well, but I'm not sure if it ultimately moved the needle with him. I'm not sure, Steven, if he would have been the first person voted out. I mean, we saw Pat and Carl talk about, okay, that's the guy, but I'm not sure if there was a consensus that Nick was going to be the first. I don't think he did anything that was that bad that he was going to be the surefire first person out of the tribe. I mean, these things can go in any number of directions once you're actually back on the beach.
That's right. That's right. I mean, a lot of those decisions happen sort of at the last minute. You know, you lose the challenge. You know, the tribe kind of decides one thing, but, you know, I think a lot of especially the early decisions are almost made just to like, oh, look, we're playing the game. Hey, I'm playing the game. I'm going to make a big move now. Everyone thinks it's Nick, but like, I'm going to target. So,
we don't know what the, people like Christian and Gabby were thinking about, or, you know, almost any of the women in terms of what they were thinking in terms of how the vote was going to go. So I think we heard from a couple of people that Nick was not, working hard, but there might have been, you know, a consensus of people that Nick had a bond with, and it would have been tougher to get him out as that first boot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably right. I mean, the story we were seeing was that like maybe Pat was irritating some people, but Nick did, you know, there was a consensus building around Nick, but you're right. When it ultimately comes down to tribal council, there's a lot more play, you know, and a lot more chaos kind of happens. And who knows, like Nick seemed to be pretty good at playing the game, you know, from the little we saw of him, like, you know, out of the gate, he made a bad first impression, but really, again, like he recognized that he had made a bad first impression. And I think there's no better and more crucial survivor skill than self-awareness. If you can see how other people perceive you and then change your behavior based on that, like you're golden.
Steven, do you think that Nick will inevitably be the first person voted out of the David tribe?
I do not.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it'll change. I feel like that this was a real blessing for Nick, the tragedy that happened to Pat. I kind of feel like that with a little more time, I think that he can improve his position, but I guess we'll have to wait and find out. Let's just touch on the rest of the David tribe. I know that you are high on Christian.
Christian, my man. He's like the purest. He is the purest version of his archetype. And, you know, I feared for Christian because in recent seasons, a lot of fans have sort of not liked the super nerdy characters. And I think some of that was because those nerdy characters were a little bit performative. Like, it seemed like they were doing it for the memes almost, you know, like they were being like over the top. But Christian is so genuine and so sincere and so, and he's probably the truest, nerdiest contestant the show has ever seen. Like, would you agree with that?
He's gone full nerd.
I don't think it's competitive. Like, who else is even in the realm? And it's wonderful. Like, he's so honestly himself. Like, you know, that slide puzzle moment, like he wasn't like acting out the slide puzzle, you know, he was just like caught in his own circle of Willis, you know, like just doing it.
Yeah, no, he was great. I mean, he was as advertised, and I thought that he was very fun to have on the show. I wasn't as worried about him in terms of the fan reaction as I was in terms of the other players being threatened by him. And I thought that that he, you know, and maybe is unable to control himself. But after he performed so well in the slide puzzle, then he was talking about how, you know, he could have done better. And I think that was in the confessional. But he was talking about how, oh, well, I've designed algorithms to do the slide puzzle. I thought that was way too much information for him to be sharing following that. You know, it was a dominating performance followed up by, you know, giving people even more information of how threatening he is.
Oh, I don't know. I thought that was a moment of almost of humility. It's like, this is the thing that I am incredibly good at. Like, I'm not like some threat across the board. Like, this is my unique area of expertise. It's like if they had a podcasting challenge and you aced it, you know, you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to kill you in all the challenges. Like, I'm a pro. I'm a pro podcast.
Yeah, but, you know, slide puzzles, I think, are probably a little more, you know, in the lane of the kind of things you'll see in future challenges as opposed to podcasting.
You don't know.
Maybe confessional.
Expect the unexpected.
That's what Jeff said. Yeah. It's a very, very big brothery night over on.
Classic Survivor line.
Yeah. Steven, who are some of the other standouts from the David tribe? You like Gabby as well?
I love Gabby. I mean, I wrote about this in my blog. You know, I really think this is the first true Survivor nerd alliance, you know, Gabby and Christian, which is, it's just heartening to see. It warms my heart. Like, they're a really fun pair. I love that confessional Christian's had about like them being a couple, but platonically, of course. Lyrsa is really cool. Like, the Lyrsa Elizabeth thing that's happening is really fun. I love that. You know, and Gabby and Christian is more of an expected pairing, but unexpected pairings are super fun too. Carl, there's something about Carl that just
resonates
for me. Yeah,
I felt good about Carl that I had ended up reluctantly making him my winner pick, but no, I felt actually really, really good about Carl through one episode.
I could see Carl going far. You know, he seems to, he's got relationships happening. We saw him already, you know, with a couple of relationships.
Yeah. Steven, I thought that Carl was going to be sort of like a little bit of a variant of the Keith Nail archetype. But no, I thought that he had a little more agency than Keith Nail. And that's probably, you know, not strong enough praise.
yeah, more agency.
It's a low bar, to be clear. I thought Carl was actually really good.
Well, you know, Carl's a truck driver and Keith is a Toto driver. So there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Called it too.
And Davey was really good too.
Yeah.
Davey
was great.
He did a good
Davey,
good job.
Like, so much enthusiasm. And he seemed to also, what I really loved about this episode was that, you know, sometimes with these Survivor premieres, you just see one or two or three strategic conversations and you're like, oh, okay, like these are the conversations that are going to matter. But I really felt with this one that we saw all of these different webs and it was more true to how I think Survivor really is. We're kind of, everybody's talking, everyone's feeling each other out. And also it like somehow it like shut down like my edit brain, you know, somehow I wasn't thinking, I know. I was like, I was finally liberated. So thank you, producers. I wasn't thinking like, oh, that's the winner's confessional, because like there were so many people who were sharing in that way, and it was really fun.
Yeah. Just a inside the podcast moment that you texted me this morning. Did Alec have W confessional last night?
And a confessional.
Yeah, well, that there was a typo in the text, and it was, did Alec have W confessional? And I'm like, is Steven saying Alec had the winner confessional last night?
Well, I read that he had a confessional, and I literally, like, I didn't remember it. Yeah. I went back and for it, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah. But you wrote, did Alec get W confessional? And I thought you were asking me, did he get the winner confessional? I'm like, I don't know.
Classic winner's edit. He talked about building the shelter. And that's what they do, the winners.
W confessional. That's the new hashtag. Yeah. When somebody gets the winner confessional, that they get the W.
If there's someone, I mean, I hate, you know, we don't want to talk about
it. I don't want to know.
I
don't want to know. You can message Steven. I don't want to know.
We can rule out Alec.
Okay. I don't know if we can, but I didn't see the W confessional for Alec last night. But okay, so you were talking about what it's like to be out there. And so I think that the Goliath tribe is where I really want to get into this here with you, because we saw Mike White get into a little bit of a situation that I think you can relate to, where he went out there and was looking for the idol, and there was a lot of talk of, where is Mike?
Yeah. Well, I also do think that, like, some, like, I think it's like, and this is going to sound like I'm defending myself, because I am. I think it's two things, right? It's like, on the one hand, he is out there looking for the idol. And on the other hand, I think people are naturally going to be suspicious of him, A, because he's clearly like the nerd character on their tribe, and B, because they know he's like a smart guy, right? They know he's done reality TV before. They know he's like a writer, when writer is like, you know, code word for smart.
The writer is code word for smart?
I think like on these shows it is, yeah. And I think in real life too.
Okay, he's literally a writer.
No, I know. But like, he's also like a smart guy.
Yeah.
Like,
and that was not a writing related pun, literally a writer.
He's his writing and his success at writing is obviously related to his incredible intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks, you know, he looks smart. Like, you know, you don't, and by that, I mean, you know, he looks nerdy.
Yeah.
You know, I think both they were initially suspicious of him anyway, probably. And you could see that when they were talking about him, they're like, we got to get him out. He knows things. He's been on The Amazing Race.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that people who've been on The Amazing Race, they know.
That's right. That's right. They don't let just anybody on there. You got to know something before they let you on. Steven.
But he also, like, you know, I think some of it was like, I'm here to have fun. Like, I'm looking for the idol. Like, of course I'm looking for the idol. Survivor.
He said that I was looking for the idol, not because I need it, but because I want it. Because I just, I'm here and I want to have it. How real of a thing is that? Just the, you know, you're here. This is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And I think it's just the excitement too of like, I'm, you know, you've been waiting for this maybe years of your life, maybe decades of your life. You know, you went through this arduous application process. You've been cooped up at Ponderosa. And then suddenly you're like let loose on this island and you're like, yeah, let's go. I'm going to run all over this thing. I'm going to dig in every hole. Like, you got all of this energy and in excitement for this moment. And I really think that kind of translates into that initial sort of like, let's have fun. Let's look for idols. Let's do crazy things.
Okay. So in the moments where Mike was missing, we saw where Natalie was the person who ended up saying, I'm going to go look for him. And she was, you know, making, you know, a few detractors along the way. She ends up and she goes and finds Mike White. And, you know, there's this buzz about Natalie at camp and potentially, is she getting on people's nerves? Is she too bossy? She goes out and tells Mike White, hey, people are looking for you. People are talking about you. I thought this was a bad move on Natalie's part to help Mike out. Because if she's somebody who's on the outs, I think she needs to be burying Mike White and not giving him, you know, a heads up.
Well, she may not know. I mean, I guess she does realize that there's an inherent there's a divide between her and some of the younger players. I mean, I read that as her kind of wanting to like create a bond with Mike, you know, where like she's like, I'm gonna rescue Mike. Like, we're the two older people out here. Maybe we can work together. Mike didn't seem particularly appreciative.
No.
Like, he was kind of
right. And, you know, people don't love the messenger in these types of situations sometimes. And other times they might feel indebted. But Steven, now Mike is sort of armed with, if it comes down to it, you know, he'll bury Natalie if it comes down to him versus her.
Yeah, no, this was definitely a mistake of Natalie's. I think you're right. Like, feeling on the outs and then seeing someone else draw attention to them, you kind of want to lean into that, draw more attention to that person and make sure that you're not the person who's getting targeted early.
Yeah. She should be like, oh, can you believe it? Mike, what classic Mike White. What a jerk. God, this guy's got to go, right? Am I right? Come on.
She may not recognize that she has irked her tribe as much as she has, because she keeps on barking orders at them in the exact same way. Mm-hmm. So she might not like, you know, the Natalie Natalia thing. I really do believe that it's like people with the same name. Yeah. Like, there's a Highlander element to it. There can be only one.
Yeah, well, it is annoying because, you know, if you've ever been in sort of like a, you know, elementary school, and now all of a sudden you went from you were Steven, but now right. You're Steven F. Or
I know.
Or that, Stevie, or you know, now you have to have a nickname and it gets on people's nerves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've experienced that firsthand in Survivor. Like, were you worried?
Yes. Go ahead.
When you saw there was another Rob on your tribe, does that scare you? Are you like, oh no, I'm the Rob that sucks out here?
No, I was not sufficiently worried. I didn't know that was a thing. To be fair, I don't think that Rob Mariano has ever said that he had animosity, that he had to share a name with me. I mean, he was Boston Rob. He already had something that was a modifier on his name.
I think that people don't even realize.
And
I
he went through
asked,
he would played with the general.
Well, but that's not. I mean, that's a different league.
That's probably why they had to call him the general.
He's not even. He's not. He doesn't even have a name.
He has a name.
He's just an honorific. I bet it's not even conscious, you know, this like the animosity that like, I bet like people aren't even aware to the extent that they want that other person out.
Maybe. So we'll see if the war of the Natalies ends up boiling over next week. Steven, something else that was really interesting in this episode that we saw Angelina and Allison have a conversation about the idol, and Angelina cited a stat that, you know, we've talked about a lot on the podcast over the years about how most of the hidden immunity idols on Survivor are found by men. Why is that? Because it's not necessarily like they are in places that are only accessible by men. And they had a conversation about that women tend to are more likely to stay and mine the fire and tend to the camp. Men are out gathering the firewood, and that's why they end up being more able to find these idols. And they sort of made a pact, and they said, hey, let's watch each other's backs. Let's go ahead and let's make sure women find the idols in this season.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I mean, you know, it was like, first of all, it was awesome to see them, you know, taking like, you know, out there looking for idols and defying those traditional and stereotypical gender roles. But also just the fact that it was based on their own knowledge of like Survivor statistics, mm-hmm. just like this idea that this like meta information about Survivor and culture has so much permeated the dialogue that it's actually affecting behavior, I thought was really fascinating.
Cut to Dan finds the hidden immunity idol. <Yeah. laughs>
Talk about your like anti-feminist message. I'm here with the idol and the two hot babes.
Yeah. You know? Now that was interesting though, that we saw that that idol discovery in a different way than we were. You know, I was almost like taken aback that Dan was in confessional and he ends up talking about, you know, I have the idol and it's in my pants. Wait, what happened? Right. And I was like, did they not get the shot? Why are we getting, like, we've never had this sort of idol discovery in this way. And then we went back after the fact and saw the story of how we did it.
I love that. I love that moment. And I think it's like a testament to how these Survivor producers are constantly pushing the narrative forward, because like now when we see the idol montage, when we see that person looking for the idol, we get the music, we're like, okay, they're going to find the idol. Like there's almost like no excitement in the idol find.
Interesting.
Because we're so keyboarded by the
music. Yeah. Around. Yeah. You're right.
The music, shots. And then, so like, now they actually created excitement by making it a surprise. So they're kind of like subverting what we expect and therefore keeping the show really.
Yes, fresh. It really, it gives you the Brant Steele experience of like, oh, Dan has the idol. Oh my God. Yeah. Steven, you touched on this in your blog and, you know, I thought it was, you know, very, very present in the episode that Dan, who I thought had a really good shot at this thing, very taken with the women on the island.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious. Just like, you know, how much that is like his defiant. Like he out of the gate says to Kara.
I think we'll go with Kara until we are corrected otherwise.
Oh, you're my Krypton. Like he like starts making like talking about kissing her. Like after their first conference, like we'll just kiss secretly. Like what? Like you've just met this person like 12 hours ago. And she's like, I mean, I definitely got the sense, and please tell me if you disagree, that Kara was less interested in Dan than Dan was in Kara.
Yeah. Well, why do you say that, Steven?
Well, I mean, she was like playing along with it. And then he was the one who's like, you're my kryptonite. You're up my alley. You're, you know, I'm like, wow. And then you get to her confessional and she's like, oh, Dan's so nice. He's funny. Like he's really into me. So I really like him too. And then like, Dan's like, okay, so are we going to do this showmance? And she's like, can't do that. That's dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, ideally you don't want to ask somebody out on a showmance on day one.
I couldn't believe it. He's like, yeah, well, just
but
kiss
you know, you don't need the love know-it-alls to tell you that.
Maybe that is what he needs.
Maybe Dan should be a guest on the love know-it-alls.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, like it was presented as this sort of like fun, flirty, cute moment. So maybe something bad will happen with it, but it doesn't seem like, wow, Dan the moron is.
No, really I was actually very surprised. I mean, he didn't get like the wacky dodo music. So I almost felt like that we're seeing that this is the formation of something that is going to be, you know, a couple on this season because I felt like the music was really, you know, very much, you know, I don't want to turn this all into a like, dissecting the score of Survivor David versus Goliath. But I thought the music was very happy, very much that like, I think, okay, this is saying we are going to be, this couple is going to be a thing.
The weirdest part of that whole thing was the conversation about the Supergirl's name. It was, she's like, oh,
the blonde
like,
Superman.
You know that Supergirl was named after, like, has my name? And he's like, oh, what name? Kara. And he's like, oh, yeah, I knew that. Like, what? Like, I named my dog after her. Wait, what name? Like they couldn't, there seemed to be a fundamental.
We'll have to have some sort of a comic book breakdown to figure all that out. I thought that also Dan, when he found the idol, had an interesting line that you highlighted, Steven, about how not only did he find the idol, but he found it
with
the most beautiful girls on the island. What?
Like the idol is almost like irrelevant. It's like, I found the idol, but more importantly, I was with these beautiful women.
Yes. What could be better? The idol and beautiful women.
Yeah, it's like we got Jean Robert.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Steven, we had also in the Goliath tribe, Natalie does seem like she's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and I do think part of it is that her not necessarily recognizing that what she's doing is irksome. You know, there's that sense that she's not necessarily gonna like changing it up or you know, you could see Natalia was trying. You know, she was trying to be open to Natalie and receptive to what she was saying, but wasn't happening.
Any thoughts on the mayor of Slamtown, John Hennigan, Stephen?
Well, it was interesting, like how open he was, you know, it seemed like he was trying to be vulnerable, right? Like he was trying to be like, I'm just me. I'm just out here. I'm not playing a character. Like I'm very aware of these characters that I play. And like, that's a fun part of my life, but like, I'm just John, which I thought was great. Like I was worried that he was going to be, there's going to be a lot of like wrestling style confessionals where he just chewed the scenery and that could be fun too, but like, this is maybe better.
Yeah. So you feel like that he's dropping the facade in the confessional.
I did. Did you not feel
that?
No,
I just think that was, I hadn't thought about it in those terms. And I'm just thinking about it now that you say it. And I think that is how this character has to work. I find that, and I think that the direction that Survivor is going in is that I think that Survivor does not want inauthentic characters. I think that they don't want you to come out there and create a persona. I think that they want to, you know, find, these authentic people. And I thought that we saw that a lot in the storytelling in this episode, where especially from the David side of things, I think they want people to come out there and be, you know, spilling their guts about these real life stories that they have.
Yeah, I agree. I think they want people who are willing to be open and willing to be vulnerable and like true to themselves. And there was a period in Survivor where they did sort of love the Phillips of the world, who were all, you know, bravado and like ridiculousness and, you know, obviously very guarded. And I think that's no longer the case, mm-hmm. you know? And it's probably why Nick strikes such an interesting chord. It's like he wants to be that guy, but it maybe has to be the other guy.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, we had an interesting first challenge in this episode where we got to see the tribes needed to pick out, the Goliaths got the opportunity to pick the weakest Davids and then pick their strongest combatants. Did you feel like you knew where this was headed?
I wasn't sure. I actually thought that this was going to be a setup to like, you know, oh, look how strong the Goliaths are. I mean, you figured that the Davids would have a fighting chance in whatever challenge they gave. Otherwise, it would just be like totally unfair. But I didn't think that, like, ultimately, this was sort of a setup to like give the Davids a win, you know? Mm-hmm. I thought you'd start the season with something where the Goliaths had an advantage.
Yeah. And I was actually very surprised that the Goliaths ended up winning, because it seemed like the story was so much like that the Goliaths will lose to the Davids. I was actually a little surprised that, even though going in, I felt like that the Goliaths had the Davids outgunned. I kind of felt like that this was going to be similar to my first season in Survivor the Amazon, where it was the men versus the women, ultimately culminating in the women winning the first challenge and sort of, you know, striking the first blow against the men. I kind of thought that we were headed on the same trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I expected the Davids to pull out a win in that first challenge. The number puzzle was not that hard, right? Like, it wasn't something you needed a Christian for.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian, granted, like he made up a lot of time in that puzzle. Like they were significantly behind, and it seemed like they lost by like one block or two blocks. So I consider that a win for Christian too.
Yeah. Steven, what other things from the premiere really stuck out to you?
So that's a great question. What about you? You know, let me mull while you talk.
Okay.
Just not tune you out as typical.
The weather, of course, was a major factor here in this first episode, and ultimately will be, I think for a bit, and maybe, going into next week, it looks like that there is a big, I'm not sure what the name of the tropical, I know it's Josie. I'm not sure if it's technically a monsoon or hurricane or cyclone that ends up hitting the island. But Steven, you played in Second Chances, where the weather was a big factor. Can you just speak a little bit to what those players are going through right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it really does. It takes a toll, you know, and I actually loved that moment in the show where you see these characters just kind of being like, well, this is going to be terrible for the next month. Like, we're going to get, you know, going to get rained on. It's just going to be miserable. Like, this is how it's going to be out here. And I thought that was also really authentic for the experience of being on Survivor too. You're just like, well, this is terrible. And like, this is just our daily lives for the next month. Yeah, I mean, it does take a toll. It certainly wears you down. You know, I think sometimes it can restrict strategic play, right? If you're in the middle of a rainstorm, much harder to leave the shelter and go out and strategize. Obviously, it wears you down. It kind of like wears your mental, your brain down, makes it harder to think straight, which can be better television, but maybe worse strategy.
I did think it was good that they had a day or two to strategize before the rains really started to downpour, whereas I think it really would have stifled the game had there been that type of torrential rain in the first day or two of the game.
Yeah, I agree. I really thought the way that it was presented was great. Just like they were miserable. They were kind of like soldiering through it. And that was how it was going to be. Short of any like insane other rainstorm. Like, it didn't seem like this. That seemed like a normal Survivor rainstorm. You know, it wasn't a monsoon or anything like that. I also thought we should call out Jessica, who I thought did great. Jessica had a really great night. The 19-year-old who everyone thinks is 22. Yeah. You really saw her a lot. Saw her making a lot of connections with people across the tribe. You know, it seemed like people naturally had an almost nurturing instinct towards her. You know, Carl said that she was like a daughter. You know, you could see B kind of like being, you know, trying to help her when they were sharing their stories. So, you know, it seemed like she's actually in a good spot, and I could see her doing.
Yeah, I thought that she was actually going to start to go the other way with the weather conditions, where she sort of talked about how miserable she was. But that ended up sort of like kicking off a round of everybody telling their stories, and ultimately B got in on that. We saw Nick's story. Steven, do you feel like the conditions are more conducive to people opening up with these types of stories where the weather is, you know, just, you know, beating down on you, and that's causing everybody to open up?
Yeah, I do think that's true. I mean, one thing, you're like miserable, you're like going to your lowest places, you're in the shelter, you're basically, you know, you're trying to find things to talk about, you know, among other things. And it's just easy to like sort of like have your mind circle these real miseries.
Like a seasonal affective disorder where you end up, you know, you haven't seen the sun and you end up going into a dark place.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do think there's that, you know, there's like the struggle of the show is intense. On the note of light places, you know, I thought Davey was such a fun, great, we didn't talk about Davey at all, like such a big presence. So much enthusiasm, so much joy coming from him when he caught the octopus. Like, that was another really fun moment.
Yeah, Davey's been really fun. He's also working with Carl. And so I think that he is set up well. It does look like that, you know, the couple of people that seem like that they might be power players. We saw Carl and Davey working together. And then on the other side, Christian and Gabby. We don't know if they're on the other side or, but those seem like that those are the two power bases right now in that group.
Well, and Larsa and Elizabeth
as well. So a couple of pairs. We don't know necessarily who is going to be aligned with who. I just, to circle back to Pat, I do think that it was such a blow because I felt like that he was set up really well, where he's so rough around the edges, Pat, but he did such a great job with building the shelter. And there was a little bit of Christian talking about like, boy, I don't know about this Pat guy. His jokes are kind of off color. I don't know if it's going to work out, but this shelter better be good. But then he aced the shelter. And he seemed like he was one of these people, kind of like Russell in Samoa, where it's raining down and he loves it. He's the only one, like, he doesn't miss a beat. He's been through so much. And so he's really set up to strive in these terrible conditions. And then to see him go out in the way he did, just, you know, such a tough blow.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It really was. It was, and you know, also, you know, great character, pulled too early. Who do you like so far, Rob? Like one episode in, who's like on your, who are your favorites? You know, I'm team Christian, obviously. Mm-hmm. Who do you like? Who do you think is well positioned to do well in this game?
Well, I mean, we've talked about most of the standouts. So let me just look at some people that we haven't touched.
I just mean like subjectively, you know, like not even necessarily.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Jeremy, who we haven't mentioned, who I think, you know, keenly observant there in the first episode. I think he's somebody who is set up well there in the Goliath tribe.
Yeah, I really like Jeremy too. I think he was great. And I loved his quote about how, like, you know, finding an idol on TV is easy. It's a lot harder when you're out here, which resonated. Yeah.
Allison, and we only touched on her briefly in terms of being a part of the duo of women that were going to look for the idol. But I think that she's somebody else who I think, you know, could do a lot of damage in this game.
Yeah. Really liked Allison a lot. Yeah, it's a good cast. It's a really fun cast. I really like this group. And it doesn't, because it also, like, maybe it was partially just because of this, how well this episode was constructed. And, you know, of course, them not having to show Tribal Council, they didn't have to show the scramble before Tribal Council, meant that there was more time for, you know, character work. You know, maybe every first premiere we get someone medevac instead of Tribal Council.
I think we could have a Tribal Council. I think that's, you know. No.
It was a joke.
In a perfect world, yeah.
World we live in. But I really enjoyed, like, I really felt like I learned a lot about the different people who were out there playing Survivor and didn't feel like I was, you know, seeing who, oh, this is the story of this person and how they win.
All right, Steven, that we have a Survivor David versus Goliath theme this season. Did, off the top of your head, as a noted fan of all books, or most of them at least, Steven, are there any other literary references that you feel like Survivor could go to next?
Well, you know that I'm a big fan of Survivor Ahab versus
Moby Dick. That was, because that one is like... people in life are either hunters or being hunted. Survivor, Survivor, Moby Dick versus Ahab captures that. What happens when you try to hunt the one thing you've been getting? What happens when you get it? What happens if it kills you?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, you know, I think, you know, that there's so much there that they could do with.
Yeah.
You know, I, my favorite book of all time is Dickens' Bleak House, you know, so I think it would be great to do Survivor, chancery, you know, lawyers versus, those who have suffered by at the whims of lawyers.
Yeah. All right. So we'll put those all on the list for future Survivor seasons, because look, if they're going to stay in Fiji, they have to keep coming up with Survivor theme concepts. And maybe we should just do a think tank that's all ideas for Fiji themes.
That'd be fun. You know that the theme that I want the most is Rivals. And I believe in it. Like, I don't know what the mechanic is, you know, why people wouldn't immediately like target their rivals if they were on the same tribe, but if they're not on the same tribe, like, is that actually fun? Like, you want to see the rivals interacting. There's got to be some kind of rivals themed Survivor
season. Yeah, I mean, I've talked about that for a long time. It makes so much sense. You know, could you get all of the rivals that you want? But it feels like that it would just be so easy to do. You'd get, you know, these 10 pairs of people that hate each other. You could have some sort of like a dual format instead of the reward challenge, where then you bring these two people in. Now, whether or not that idea, you know, excites Jeff or production, I guess will remain to be seen. But it feels like that you'd have a lot of, you know, conflict that would be built into the show.
Yeah. And like, it would be fun too, to like bring back some of like the classic rivalries from the show's history, you know, like in the same way that they bring back these, you know, these old school players, which I guess now we're old school player. Well, you've always been an old school player, but now I'm an old school
player. Yes.
It would be, you know, like, I don't know, like, I mean, like, I'm sure she would never agree to it, but like Courtney and Jean Robert, like that would be so fun to see, you know, at least, I mean, it's like some, you know, there's so many.
Who's your rival?
I mean, it's probably Joe Anglim, right? But like, I obviously would never play again, but like, if I did, it would be to go back and take out Joe.
Okay. All right. Look, hey, if there's a good reason to bring back Joe, then maybe we could do Survivor Rivals.
Yeah. Okay. Anything for Joe.
All right. Steven, so Scott St. Pierre is not with us today, so we're unable to take questions here live today, but I feel like that we've covered everything. No tribal council this week, but bounced around the tribes, and then next Wednesday night, you and I will be together live with a great, great panel of Survivor alumni that are going to be joining us for that show.
Who do we have?
Let's just tune in. Just tune in. You know, I don't want to, you know, give out the list, and then if somebody for some reason can't make it, to say, oh, you said, I want a refund, guys, because you told me that this person was going to be there and they weren't.
Oh, wow. I don't want that. Yeah, we don't want that at all.
Show up. There's going to be survivors there. We're going to talk about everything that happens in the second episode of Survivor, David versus Goliath. And Steven, let me also heap some praise on you as well, because I was very proud of you today when I read your article on people.com, and you awarded the fishy this week to Christian.
Yeah. Why were you proud of that?
I so thought that I would have bet anything the fishy was coming for the weather. Fishy was going to the boat driver, the survivor helicopter pilot. I thought, so good on you. I think that was a great job, Stephen.
You know, Rob, I wanted to give it to the producers for this incredibly produced episode, but I actually thought to myself, oh God, I'm going to have to get crap from Rob about it. Rob's going to make some big deal.
Then
about
my
it.
Work here is done. Yeah.
I just don't want to deal with all that stress. So,
look,
I mean, Christian,
it means a lot to the players to get the fishy. People track this. You think in the Survivor production office, somebody's going to run in, guys, great news. We got the fishy. We got the fishy this week.
We did it. You know what? Like they're doing well. The players just show up. Like they didn't even vote somebody out. Yeah, they built a shelter. Way to go. The producers, this is like their job. They're like laboriously assembling this beautiful episode. And you can't even show a little bit of gratitude for that, Rob.
I have gratitude, but that.
Oh, but not fishy worth of gratitude.
What is the fishy award for if we're giving it to the production?
It's like what's any great award for, you know? I mean, like Bob Dylan won the Nobel Peace or the Nobel Literature Prize, you know? So okay. Who knows?
All right. Stephen, great being back here with you for this episode of the podcast, and we will be together live in person and then back in our regular time slot doing the regular know-it-alls as opposed to the in-person edition of the know-it-alls the rest of the way for this season. But I am excited to finally get into seeing who's getting voted out and why.
Yeah, I'm excited. You really get a sense of the tribe's dynamics when the pen goes to parchment. Okay.
Stephen Fishback is on Twitter. He is at Stephen Fishback. Stephen, anything else you want to tell people about?
No, it's a joy to be back, Rob. It's great to see you again. Yeah. You know, the hardest work in podcasting. This is really fun. I'm excited to see you in person next week. We're going to have like a big hug, maybe dinner.
Very, very excited. It's been too long. So looking forward to the live show coming up on Wednesday night in New York City. So be on the lookout for that. So much coming up here on the podcast in these next couple of days about this Survivor premiere episode. Of course, if you haven't listened to Josh Wiggler's first one out, that's required listening. Be sure to check that out in the podcast feed. I will be speaking with Pat Cusack in about an hour and 15 minutes. So that exit interview is going to be coming up right on the heels of this. And then I'll be speaking with Dr. Mike Zahalski later on this afternoon. Get your feedback questions in for Shannon Gates if you need a reminder on how to do that. I'll be talking with Shannon over the weekend. So you have it up until Saturday morning to get those feedback questions in. You can email survivor@robhasawebsite.com. You can do that for Dr. Mike as well. And then you could also go to robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or call 323-282-RHAP. I'll also tweet out a question, tweet, and you could reply to that with your questions for the feedback show. We love hearing from you guys because that's the people's podcast, the feedback show. That's where we answer your questions about what's going on. And then, of course, I'll talk with Josh Wiggler, who will have a lot of stories from being on location in Fiji for the Survivor 37 premiere, everything that he got to see behind the scenes. We'll ask him about his whole experience, talking with Pat as well. He went to go visit Pat in person, Stephen.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just...
Is Pat Cusack related to Amy Cusack? Was Amy?
I think he's related to John and Joan Cusack.
Oh, wow. Yes.
So that comes from, they don't really talk about that. Doesn't it kind of blows up the whole Goliath versus David theme as being like the poster person. But yeah, so he is a sibling of Joan Cusack as well.
You can see the family resemblance. Yeah.
Joan, John, and Pat, the three Cusacks. And then, of course, get your wand off submissions. Stephen, how many people are currently working on a Baby Got Back submission for the wand off this week?
Seven.
Take the over. Take the over as we get into the wiggle room. Happy to report Pat is feeling better based on first one out. And then, of course, so much going on all season long on Robin's podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast feed. We really appreciate your feedback and star ratings here at the start of a new season in the iTunes Apple Podcast Store. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for that. And of course, thanks so much to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast who make all of this podcasting possible. To find out more about why it's so beneficiary to be a patron of Rob as a Podcast, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre for getting this show out to you guys. Steven, I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week, Rob. I'm excited. Woo! Survivor, know it all.